minutes, 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Wake up, sheeple. It's Friday morning. It's going to be okay, right? Right, Riley? It's
sure.
Going to be okay, right?
Sure.
Kalo, is it going to be all right?
Of course it is.
Oh, my God. If you're listening in New York, you're listening to 1190 WLIB. It's a beautiful day here in Manhattan. I don't know what's going on where you are. It is beautiful, aside from the fact that apparently a chunk of a mountain fell onto the Henry Hudson up a little north of here.
Yes.
It's amazing when nature just does its thing. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's just, okay, I'm going to let this drop onto the highway. And you saw it this morning driving by?
I saw it this morning. Driving over the George Washington Bridge from New Jersey, it looks like a movie set on the upper part of Manhattan. This, and by the way, there was a retaining wall. This wasn't just a landslide. This wall apparently collapsed. And everything.
Let me understand something. The retaining wall stopped doing its job.
Exactly.
The retaining wall quit yesterday.
Not long after having been inspected, the retaining wall quit. Yes.
Isn't that amazing? When nature wants to do it, it does it.
Yeah. Nature says, inspect this.
Hey, exactly. I'll be at Gotham Comedy Club tonight for a couple of shows and tomorrow night here in New York. If you're around, you want to come by, come on by. I got a weird feel. Last night I had a little trouble. A little trouble with the significant other. A little trouble with the wife a little bit.
A little trouble?
Not big trouble. I get this call from her. She goes, I don't have the bleep. She calls, that's all right, man. It's all right. I'll get it later. She goes, are you a poet? And I'm like, what? Am I wedding a poet? Yeah, exactly. She goes, are you? Would you tell me if you were? And I'm like, what are you talking about? A singer? A poet? Are you having sex with a poet? And I'm like, what is going on? She goes, well, in the drawer of the dresser, I found a crumpled up set list or something that looks like it was in women's writing.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, and like, you know, it's weird. There's no better feeling than knowing you haven't done anything wrong. Let me tell you, because there is absolutely no better feeling, because with complete confidence, I could say, what are you talking about? I have no idea what you're talking about. And she pulls out this list, and she reads this set list, you know, and I'm like, I have no idea what that is. But part of me was scrambling for an explanation. Even though I knew I had done absolutely nothing wrong, there was part of me that I better make something up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because even like, because then you start second guessing yourself, saying, even though I know I did nothing wrong, she's going to think I did. So no matter what I say, she's still going to think I did something wrong, and I have to come up with an explanation for this, or just disregard it. But it's going to stick in her craw because my wife's jealous. And she had said, when I got back, I said, how far had you gone with this thing? And she's like, well, I knew exactly what happened. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She goes, well, there was this woman, this poet, this singer or something.
poet or singer, huh?
That you were having sex with, and she knew that I came here, you know, at least once a month or twice a month. And she crumpled this thing up on purpose and put it in the drawer that I put my socks in.
Wow.
Yeah, she had it all worked out.
That purse really didn't last long, did it?
The purse, yeah.
Yeah.
No, but the thing was...
A necklace seems in the cards now.
I knew she knew I didn't do nothing, and you know what the explanation was? It was that damn musician that I used to rent my apartment to. He and his girlfriend, who was the lead singer of his band, you know, they lived there. I had no idea, you know, what the hell that was, but I'm glad I put it together, because I'm like, of course that was, because I didn't know what the hell it was. You know what I mean? But that's what it was. I had two musicians living in there, and they crumpled up. Of course, yeah, I slept with the musician. And his girlfriend. Yeah, both of them. You know, but, yeah. Yeah, but that's different if there's two people. Yeah. You know what I mean? Then you're not really cheating. You're like, I don't know what happened. We were talking, and then it was mostly his fault.
Wow.
Yeah. No, nothing happened, but thank God. You know,
but wait a minute. You all didn't really argue about this for any great
length
of time.
No.
You said you were in trouble with the woman there for a minute.
No, I'm not in trouble. Okay. She said the purse is still working. And my mother came into town yesterday, and she has called 900 times. She got into town yesterday, and she called, I think, she called three times. Jazz guy called once. And my wife says, how many times are they going to call the first day they're here? How many more times? And it was nothing. It was right. They invited us to go to a kosher restaurant last night, and I decided not to.
What?
Yeah, he's got family. He's John,
yeah.
My jazz guy, my mom's significant other there, is a very religious guy, and his family's very religious, and they were meeting some people, so they went to a kosher restaurant. And I said, you know, it's weird, Riley. I don't want to be rude, but, you know, when you have the hours we work, You know, come the afternoon.
That's right.
You
know, done.
Yeah, I don't want to meet new people. I don't want to talk to people. I don't want to do this sort of, Air America, it's, you know, I don't want to do it.
Hey,
you know what I mean?
Do you go through situations where people forget what time you go to bed and you start getting phone calls at like 8:30, 9 o'clock when you're just starting to drift?
Turn those phones off, dude. I turn those phones off. I talked to our publicity department yesterday. But I hadn't eaten by like 3:30 yesterday.
Bad move.
I hadn't eaten. Where you know I'd been up 12 hours. You know I ate breakfast, but that was it.
Yeah.
I'm starting to break apart. You know how you get raw and weird.
Yes.
And I'm on the phone and I'm talking to the people down at the headquarters at Air America headquarters. And my wife goes, "Why are you yelling?" And I'm like, "I'm not yelling. I'm just having a conversation with the person." She's like, "Why are you yelling now? What are you talking about?" I had no idea that I'd, like, you know, you just, your whole psyche, your whole being just rips apart when you're on these hours. And by that time, you're pretty raw.
Yeah. Yeah, the phone call thing, it's been driving me nuts lately. I've just been caught just as you're starting to drift off to sleep.
I
haven't been able to figure out exactly, you know, my wife bought this new phone machine. I don't know how to turn the thing off. It's just been bong, bong all night.
Riley, you're hilarious. I mean, you know, it doesn't take much to figure just turning things off.
No,
right?
Just
am
throw
I crazy?
It against the wall or something.
You just break it?
Yeah.
I
that
do that
works.
Too.
You know, it shuts up.
I'll be honest with you. I think this is some sort of weird infantile thing that you and I share. If someone is around to do it, why learn how to do it?
Exactly. Hey, you bought the machine, you fix.
Or just sort of like, will you fix it so it doesn't do the thing?
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I do that too. It's like I'm a child. Hey, look at this. You know what I'm holding right here, Chris? Let me just
tell
you. I just want to tell you what I'm holding right
What's
here.
That?
It is the headline is, Bill Gates says iPod success won't last. You understand? So this is the weird thing about this. If you wait long enough, things become obsolete almost immediately. So that little beautiful toy you have with the pretty white headphones is going to be like the Betamax. You understand? It's going to be like the Betamax. Huh?
And how does Bill Gates know this?
Bill Gates knows everything. There's only two people in the world that know things. It's Bill
That's
Gates
right.
and this other guy that no one knows.
The late mouth
yeah. I don't know who the hell it is, but it's Bill Gates and a couple other people that know everything that's going on in the world. Bill Gates is one. The other guy has something to do with the financial community. He was at the Bilderberger meeting over the weekend. The Bilderberg meeting. We'll get into that because that's where they meet. That's where they meet.
Yeah. The Bilderbergers.
Yeah, the they that people refer to when they say, you know, they run the country. They run the planet. They make that weird liquid come out of my ear when I'm sleeping. That's where they meet, the Bilderberg meeting. But here, the iPod success won't last because you know why he says?
What?
He says eventually, very soon, and not that Apple might not keep up with this, but it's all going to be in the cell phone. Everything's going to be in the cell phone. You'll actually be able to download your entire brain into your cell phone.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I'm not lying about this. Everything's going to be in there. They're going to have cell phones that will run your car. You'll be able to take pictures with it. There will be a sex toy. They will and they will actually have music. And this is like an all-in-one thing. Why wouldn't it all be in one thing? You know what I mean? Pretty soon you'll be able to just go zzz and be somewhere else, you know, like on Star Trek.
Beam me up, Chris.
Yeah. There's not going to be any need for any kind of transportation. It'll just be a button on your cell phone, and all of a sudden you just go, and you'll be able to fly down the street. I'm not making this up.
See, that's terrifying.
Right.
Because what if you lose your cell phone? You're screwed.
That's right. But people are already like that. You know, if you lose your BlackBerry or your cell phone, you're only 2 hours away from going, where do I live?
I'm done.
Where do I work again? How do I get hold of my mommy? Where am I? This is a sad, strange planet without my cell phone and my iPod.
Now, he really believes that, because there are cell phones now, that have this MP3 thing built in. I think it's the first generation of them may just be coming out now. And Gates will find some way to, you know, have some monopoly on the software, guaranteed.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's obviously he's sort of condescending to Apple. It's like, you know, he's sort of saying, well, Apple, they had a cute thing back when, you know, with the iPod was cute, and when they first had the Apple computers, they were very cute too. It's all very cute, but come on, I'm Bill Gates.
I will destroy you.
The world. Hey, we got a great show today. We got Ben Folds coming up.
Yeah.
We got Gary Schroen is going to be, and that's not the last lead singer of Van Halen, Gary Schroen, but Gary Schroen has written a book about the CIA's early dispatch to Afghanistan, and we want to address some of the issues that are going on with him today. And also, my mother supposedly is going to drop by. I'm not so sure we're going to put her on the air, but there seems to be a general movement here
yes.
to putting him on the air. And Eilish McCarvey is going to come and talk to us about this Dr. Hager fella who was accused of anally raping his wife many times over the years. And this is a Christian conservative spokesman. Okay, he's a big dude. He was an FDA dude. There was a lot of controversy about bringing him into the FDA, and now the accusations set on him.
Yes,
that is what's going on. And we tried to call him actually. 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
Past the hour, wake up, sheeple. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Happy to be here. Good morning, New York. Listening to 1190 WLIB. Good morning, America. Look, man, I'll tell you something, Riley. After that evacuation yesterday, there's one thing that's insanely clear about how we're prepared and what they do. First of all, they don't tell the press that there is an airplane that is less than 3 miles from the White House. It was a single-engine Cessna or twin-engine. It was single-engine, I think.
Yeah.
A couple of Yahoos in there. Got a black helicopter up in the air, a couple of jets. All right, so 35,000 people are scrambling. Nancy Pelosi pulled out of her shoes and run out of the Capitol, by Secret Service guys, going, "Wee!" All right, scrambling Republicans, some of them crying, I heard. Some of them just going, "What? What?
Help
no." Yeah, all right, the president's wife. Evacuated. First lady evacuated. Dick Cheney put into a sealed chamber and put down an elevator into the core of the earth where he resides on the off time.
Nancy Reagan too, apparently, from what I read.
Okay, but here's the deal. Where's the prez? The prez is doing wheelies. 30 miles out, up in the hills of Maryland. He's riding around with his high school buddy on a bike going, "Hey, look, can you do this?" All right, so he's riding around. Does anyone tell the president? No. Do they think it's necessary to tell the president? No. Because look what happened. They told him late on the 9/11 thing, and he just sat there with a baffled look and decided to continue listening to second graders tell a story about a goat. They've learned their lesson, and he probably has too. That's protocol. Look, if something bad happens, don't tell me because we know that I'll get that stupid look on my face. All right, so. Basically, they are, and this is policy, insulate the president from having to take responsibility for anything until we're absolutely sure that, he can't get blamed. So now they got a president up there. Let's just listen to Scott McClellan, fielding questions from a press that actually asks him some questions here.
The president wasn't in danger is one aspect of this, but he's also the commander-in-chief. There was a military operation underway. Other people were in contact with the White House. Shouldn't the commander-in-chief have been notified of what was going on?
John, the protocols that we put in place after September 11th were being followed. They did not require presidential authority for this situation. I think you have to look at each situation and the circumstances.
He was riding his bike, and we were told not to disturb him. I'm sorry, I'm paraphrasing.
That's what officials
never disturb president during exercise.
The off-site location, and this was a matter of minutes.
Off-site location.
Even on a personal level, did nobody here at the White House think that calling the president to say, "By the way, your wife has been evacuated from the White House. We just want to let you know everything is okay."
Actually, all the protocols were
the president's pathologically self-centered and doesn't really care.
You point out were taken to secure locations or evacuated in some cases. I think, again, you have to look at the circumstances surrounding the situation, and it depends on the situation and the circumstance.
35 minutes, 35,000 people evacuated, people freaking out, the press freaking out, scrambled jets in the air. The president, while he was doing wheelies, or going, "Hey, look at this, how fast can yours go?" probably saw the jets in the air and go, "Wow, air show." So what? But they don't tell him. They don't tell him because why? Why, Riley? Why do you think? Oversight? Or because they don't want to get involved? How do people that voted for this guy rationalize this type of behavior? This is the leader of the free world. This is the go-get-em president. Not even alerted because they're afraid to tell him.
I told you the press would get after them after them not being notified yesterday, the White House press corps.
Well, here they go after him some more. Let's hear that, Chris.
Maybe take a slight step back, aside from the particulars of what happened yesterday and when. Maybe the larger issue has to do with whether this president is sufficiently at the levers of power on his job during the day or night. We think of the event at the ASNE meeting where the president said he didn't know about the issue of possibly requiring passports of all Americans who are returning from Canada or Mexico until he read it in the papers. And I think that's the larger question we're all trying to get at.
No, I disagree. I think that's unfounded. Absolutely, the president is.
Again, the president was exercising
your characterization completely, and I think the American people reject that as well.
There's protocol.
The president was informed immediately upon the conclusion of the bike ride as well.
Yeah, after he exercised.
But by that point, he was well.
Same topic.
Sure.
Might there be something wrong with protocols that render the president unnecessary when the alarm is going off at his house?
Do you know how important that is?
Not at all, Ken. And I would disagree strongly with the way you characterize it for the reasons I stated earlier and that I talked about. This was a situation where the president was in an off-site location. He was not in danger.
He was actually in a
situation
bike.
Where protocols
off-site location
have been put in place to address the situation. The protocols were followed. The Secret Service detail and the military aid that were with the president were being kept apprised of the situation as it was developing.
And they didn't tell him.
Of 15, 20 minutes.
Should we bother him to get the set?
As you're well aware, after several minutes, the plane turned away from the direction
not
of the White
point.
House Capitol.
Not the point.
There's so many disconnects here. You got a plane that was assessed as not being a threat. You got 35,000 people evacuated. You got a person who you claim is a hands-on commander-in-chief who's let to go ride his bicycle through, you know, the rural wildlands of
tricycle.
Maryland while his
How
wife
close
is
he to saying tricycle?
Some secure location somewhere. It's just not adding up.
No, John, I disagree, and let me tell you why. You have highly skilled professionals who are involved.
McClellan is
in
giving himself cancer
like
here.
This.
You know when you lie like this,
different
and he's speaking this tone, I can hear throat cancer.
To National Security Council officials, to our Secret Service officials, and to others, and to local officials, and they work very closely together.
Huh?
The protocols that were put in place were followed,
yeah.
And I think they were followed well.
That was the post-Gatorade after-shower protocols.
Wow.
Like can you see Secret Service guys with their headsets going, should we tell him he's having a good time? I hate to bother him when he's having such fun. He's talking to they're doing wheelies. I'm not going to bother him. All right, you guys take care of it. So when we come back, we're going to get into Afghanistan.
Yeah, and we've got Gary Strong coming up to help us when we return here on Air America Radio.
Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here. Mark the Maron. Where did that come from?
Mark Maron.
Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
This morning's edition here on Air America Radio. Good morning, folks. We were talking yesterday, Riley and I, a bit. We're going to talk to our guest in just a second. Gary Strone is going to be here. He's the author of First In, an insider's account of how the CIA spearheaded the war on terror in Afghanistan. So hold up. Don't go anywhere for that because we want you to hear this. But, you know, yesterday we were talking about Afghanistan, the situation in Afghanistan now. As it was reported Monday, Mullah Muhammad Omar. Mullah Omar was offered amnesty from wherever he is and denied it and said, we're still fighting. We're still, aggressively, fighting. And now imagine this is a Taliban representative who was speaking for him. And now 3 days later, we've got protests all across Afghanistan that are going into Pakistan that are being said to be in response to the desecration of the Quran in Guantanamo Bay, which was reported months ago, almost a year ago. So I've been speculating that some of this has to do with the resurgence of Taliban activity. A lot of these kids are under 20 years old, and I'm assuming that many of them were probably educated as young men in Taliban schools. And I'm just wondering as to the stability of Afghanistan. And I'm excited that we have a guest that will be able to address that because he was there at the beginning of the war in Afghanistan right after 9/11. He was about to retire, apparently. He's been in the CIA for over 35 years. He's a primary source for Steve Cole's Ghost Wars, for Bob Woodward's Bush at War. Gary Strone, thank you for being with us.
Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
So in current Afghanistan, before we get into the history of it, do you see this as an instability again? Is the Taliban taking a foothold again in the region?
Well, the first thing is that there's a legitimate reaction by the people in Afghanistan, and I'm sure it's going to spread through into the Muslim world over this information about the desecration of the Holy Quran, which in Islam is a really, really bad thing. I mean, that's you can be killed instantly by people for dropping the Quran into the mud by accident. I mean, it's
by a certain type of religious fanatic.
It's true that the Taliban is coming back. They're hiding in Pakistan primarily. They're getting a lot of support from Pakistanis there who are sympathetic to the Taliban philosophy. And Mullah Omar, I'm sure, is hiding in Quetta, Pakistan, and is probably being hosted in some way by some senior Pakistanis there in the city, who look at him as an honored guest.
And there's sort of there still seems to be, at least on the ground, an active network of Taliban resistance. And I just assume that information is carried through these type of protests by these young people who still look to these leaders as their leaders. Yeah,
you're absolutely correct. Most of the young guys that would be out on the street grew up in the madrasas who had this religious philosophy thrust down their throats repeatedly, and so they look at the Taliban philosophy as what true Islam should be, as perverted as the Taliban regime was. And they look at a fellow like bin Laden as a real folk hero almost. He's thumbed his nose at the United States. He's hurt us, and yet he remains free. And so he's a real kind of Robin Hood-like figure in that part of the world.
Gary Schwerin, what information do you have about the extent to which American troops, if at all, are involved in trying to deal with these protests on the streets of Afghan cities?
I've been on this tour. I have no knowledge right now. I would think that the American troops are not taking any active role. They're allowing the Afghan authorities to take care of demonstrations on the street. American troops would be protecting American installations, the American embassy, American compounds that we have around there, and would deal with a demonstration should it get violent at that facility.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, see, the thing I'm curious about is whether these kinds of protests are spontaneous as people get the news about what happened in Guantanamo, or are the Taliban forces that you've been talking about, are they the catalyst? Are they the matches that are lighting the fuse here?
I think the initial reactions are spontaneous. This, when you hear word of that, when people, and you, there's no telling what was, how that information was passed to the people. I mean, how bad it was described by people who wanted to agitate and get things going. There are also in that part of the world, really, a lot of people don't have a lot to do. And a demonstration is kind of fun, and you can get out there and have fun and holler at the big guys. And so there's a combination of this. And, of course, any of the Taliban elements that are out there are old Al-Qaeda guys who are still hanging around would be encouraging this. This is exactly what they want to see, is to shake this foundation of this government, which is, frankly, very fragile.
Yeah, as you said in your book, it's very interesting to me that, you know, now, you know, years after 9/11, it seems that in a lot of ways, the region, you know, certainly in relation to terrorism and global terrorism, is much more dangerous than it was previous to 9/11. I don't know if you concur with that completely, but in your book, you were about to leave the CIA, and you were the first guy they called to start dealing with Afghanistan.
Well, I had a lot of experience with Afghanistan that goes back to 1978 and onward, and I knew a lot of the senior Mujahideen commanders from that time frame. And then as we renewed contacts from 1996 onward, trying to get after bin Laden, I mean, it was logical to go talk to these old commanders that we had known who had been friendly with us and who had helped to try to track bin Laden down. So, yeah, I was a logical choice, although I thought since I was actually in retirement,
sure,
in the phasing out that I wasn't going to get called. I was very grateful to be.
But you were the guy that knew, you know. So they took you in there, and now obviously, you know, bin Laden was a significant enough threat already. So you were aware of him, you know, and a lot of people, you know, certainly on the right, you know, when bin Laden's name is even brought up, they're like, but Clinton could have taken him out, and you discuss that pretty thoroughly in your book about what happened that day.
Well, there were a number of points in time when we had bin Laden in our gun sights from 97 up until probably into the early 2000. We were tracking him. I was running operations from Islamabad. Had Afghan agents, teams of agents, actually out on the ground following bin Laden around. Before the bombings of his bombings of the embassy, the two embassies in Africa in August of 98, his schedule and his movements were not as secretive or as erratic. And so there were times when we could actually fix him at place and time and long enough so that we could plan something. In every incident that we had, there was a chance of collateral damage. In other words, we were perfectly willing at that point to kill bin Laden in some sort of an airstrike, but the fact would be we would end up killing people who really weren't directly involved with him, but who might be around him at that point, living in a camp that he was in, living on a compound that he was being housed in.
But these weren't just civilians. These were people that I imagine that the U.S. or the CIA had significant relationships with. They weren't just regular people.
Well, bin Laden had was surrounded himself, obviously, with people who admired him. In March of 1999, we had him at a camp in southern Kandahar, and he was staying with, being hosted by a group of senior UAE princes from the United Arab Emirates. And there was a debate over whether we should strike the camp with cruise missiles. And I said, well, there's all of these Arab princes there. And my point was, well, they know who he is. I mean, he's the biggest dog in the world. And as I've said before, if you lie down with fleas, you wake up, or I am a dog, you wake up with fleas.
Yeah.
So they know who he is and what he's done. Why don't we just strike the camp anyway? And it came back, and they said, no, the United Arab Emirates is an ally. You know, it's a partner in the region. And, yeah, these guys know what they're doing, but we're not gonna take the strike.
Now, you said something earlier that I found interesting and I wanted to explore very briefly. You said that you were in contact with Mujahideen, who obviously had fought with America's backing against the Soviets, and you said that some of them were still friendly. To what extent were they friendly, and were there large numbers of them that became unfriendly, and if so, why?
All through the 80s and up until about, I guess, through 1990, we had relationships with a number of Mujahideen commanders around the entire country, some very senior people like Ahmad Shah Massoud, Jalaluddin Haqqani. Those two guys are a perfect example. Jalaluddin Haqqani became a very strong supporter of the Taliban. He remains a very active Taliban supporter. He refuses any offers of amnesty, just as Mullah Omar has done. Well, at the same time, Ahmad Shah Massoud fought the Taliban, remained friendly to the United States, even though we had walked away from him. And so it just depended on how the situation on the ground went, whether a commander was pro-Taliban or he was pro-U.S.
Mm-hmm. So, like, why don't we take a little break and regroup? And when we come back, I want to talk about, you know, maybe compare, you know, Afghanistan of the 80s in terms of terrorist breeding ground to Iraq today. I want to talk a little bit about Iran, and I want to talk a little bit about, you know, Bush's administration's, you know, fault in not getting bin Laden up to this point and where that lies on him. We're talking to Gary Sharon. The book is First In, an Insider's Account of How the CIA Spearheaded the War on Terror in Afghanistan. We'll be back with him after this. It's 44 past the hour.
Hi, this is Rob Corddry from The Daily Show, here to remind you that when top news reporters and investigative journalists like me want their news skewed so far to the left it's wearing a dress, we turn to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Before the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Good morning.
We're talking to Gary Sharon, the author of First In, an Insider's Account of How the CIA Spearheaded the War on Terror in Afghanistan. We're talking a bit about bin Laden and his elusiveness. You're one of the people that believes, very confidently, that you could have had him at the Battle of Tora Bora.
Oh, that's correct. I think that there's no question in my mind, and I think anybody in the CIA would tell you the same thing, that bin Laden was there. We came close to getting him. But unfortunately, the back door was open, and he was able to slip away and slip into Pakistan.
So why did Tommy Franks and George Bush and Dick Cheney all get on the same page and say he wasn't there?
I think you'd have to ask them.
Oh, come on. I thought you guys were talking.
Not in the book. Huh?
I honestly don't know, because it was there. What can I say? If you say there was no hard evidence, did we get a picture of him there, or that kind of thing? Well,
yeah.
No. But was he there? Yes, absolutely.
No, no hard evidence certainly doesn't stop this administration from saying definite things.
Exactly.
Now, were you really the one who was charged with bringing his head back in a box?
Absolutely. Those are my marching orders on the 19th of September. I was told by Kofor Black, who was the chief of CTC, Counter Terrorist Center, Gary, your job is to kill bin Laden, and I want you to bring his head back to me in a cardboard box on dry ice.
For President Bush.
So I can show it to President Bush.
Well, that's interesting, because now apparently he's so out of the loop, they don't want to interrupt a bike ride when they're evacuating the Capitol. But you know, that must have been back in the day where he had some active concern with what actually happened in the war on terror. But what I want to talk about now is, you know, I am frightened personally. You know, I saw you on Meet the Press. I saw you address Musharraf in terms of how he's in a precarious situation. Iraq is a precarious situation. Global terrorism is higher than it ever has been. You know, what happens now? I mean, is there any hope that bin Laden is going to be caught? Is this capture of the Al-Qaeda number 3, al-Libi, a positive thing? What, you know, obviously it's positive, but is it going to lead us closer?
Well, you're right on the mark there, because the capture of the number 3 guy and the Al-Qaeda is a significant step. It hurts the organization, which has already been hurt significantly. Bin Laden is isolated. He's hiding in northern Pakistan, and yet he maintains some degree of control over his organization. I think that it's significant that a capture of al-Libi has a significance in another way, that the government of Pakistan was actually had the wherewithal to go into that region and take this guy down. They have been very reluctant to move into that area, because it's bandit country. The people there hate the government of Pakistan. And I think there's a reluctance on Musharraf's part to really take on bin Laden.
Yeah.
Because if the government of Pakistan does that and it's open, the people of Pakistan the fundamentalist people will go crazy there.
Who is paying off the people who are harboring bin Laden, in your judgment?
I think bin Laden himself has enough money to pay for his upkeep. Just remember, he's loved in that area. One out of four children in the region is in that area of Pakistan, and is named Osama.
Oh, wow. Born since 25%.
The younger kids are named that. The kids from these fundamentalist areas.
Well, before we wrap up, Gary Schroen, I want to ask you, because I know you know a lot about Iran too, and apparently we don't know as much as we're supposed to about Iran. Do you think any of that blame can fall on John Bolton's opportunism and dropping the ball in terms of paying attention to what's going on in Iran?
I think Iran has. We've kind of put Iran fell into a distant third in our the administration's look at this, that region, and Iran is. I mean, people talk about, there are moderate mullahs there. There are no moderate Iranian mullahs.
Hmm.
There are some that are less radical than others, but their worldview is to fly the Islamic flag over the White House. They want to see Israel the Israelis tossed into the sea. And we ignore Iran at our peril.
And so now, before you get out of here, if you were still working and I was the president, what should I do? What should we do? What's our priority right now?
I think we should refocus efforts on getting the PACs to stand up to what they promised to do, which is to help us get bin Laden and make some sort of a package that makes it palatable to them, and then really push Musharraf to live up to it. And see if we can't squeeze that net around bin Laden and catch him.
Well, thank you very much, Gary Schroen. The book is First In, An Insider's Account of How the CIA Spearheaded the War on Terror in Afghanistan. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Pleasure talking to you, gentlemen.
Thanks a lot.
Sure, so now let's talk about John Bolton, Riley. I mean, he seems like this. The committee said go ahead, but we're not going to support him. We're not going to say we're not going to support him. So what the hell does a committee mean, ultimately?
Well, in this case, we're talking about the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and they debated John Bolton backward, forward, upward, downward, And what they ended up doing was voting along party lines in a 10-8 vote to send his nomination to the full Senate, but without a recommendation. The first time this has been done in the upper house in 22 years.
But what the hell does it mean, really? I mean, it's like Voinovich comes on, he says, look, you know, I'm not going to support him. You know, I'll say yes here, but I don't know what I'm going to do in the Senate, and it's still a big mystery. You know, but what the hell? Didn't it just make this committee null and void? What was the point of all this? I guess to have an active debate on the floor so Joe Biden could talk for a half hour, so everybody could get their words in, so everybody could, you know, push this guy to the wall and make America see, you know, the schmuck that he is. But ultimately, what do we got now?
Well, what we have is a situation where everybody can say they won. The Republicans that voted to send him out say, oh, we sent him out. We, you know, we believe even Voinovich. We sent his nomination to the floor. The full Senate will vote up or down. The Democrats can say we stood firm. The eight members, the eight Democrats on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee stood firm against him, and that's why he didn't go to the full Senate with a recommendation from the committee.
So, of course, now the new Republican frame outside of the obstructionist frame, which is not an obstruction, is the up or down vote. We had Chris Shays on the show yesterday.
Yes.
Some people were upset with us because we actually gave him a moment to say up or down votes. But if you remember, Chris Shays also said that as a Republican, he's not against the filibuster. He's against a nuclear option. He's against the religious right. You know, I mean, it's like, look, you know, it's not my pleasure to have Republicans on here, but we couldn't get Democrats on here. And I think it was significant that we got a Republican to, you know, to speak against this party in a public fashion. The up or down vote is their new pitch, though.
Oh, yeah. The up or down vote is their new pitch. And remember that Voinovich and some of the other senators, Republicans, who were on that Foreign Relations Committee who were vacillating about Bolton got a tremendous amount of pressure from the White House, from the president himself, from Karl Rove, from a bunch of different people who were contacting them, pressuring. And you know how they pressure inside the Beltway, don't you? This program, that program that can benefit your constituents in your home state, we'll take care of this. We'll press this for you. We won't close this military base in your state. There are all kinds of little subtle pressures that are put on people in these kinds of positions to get them to take eventually the positions that they do.
It's a subtle coercion. This is all politics. This is, you know what I mean?
Inside the Beltway crap.
When we come back, I tried to call Dr. W. David Hager in response. This is a guy who was a part of the FDA. He's written books about Jesus and how Jesus cared for women. Now he's been accused of anally raping his wife.
Whoops.
And I had a couple questions with him, so I tried to give him a buzz, and we'll hear that call when we come back. We'll also talk to Ben Folds later in the show, and we're going to talk to Eilish. Yes.
Eilish McGarvey.
McGarvey about the piece she wrote about this Hager fella.
Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour. Good morning, geniuses. It's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Wake up, sheeple. It's a beautiful day. It's Friday. The weather here in New York City is great. If you're listening to 1190 AM, good morning. Good morning, America. Look, I finally went to the therapist yesterday, Riley.
Uh-oh.
We got some stuff done. Anyways, I will be at Gotham Comedy Club tonight for two shows, tomorrow night for two shows. We got Ben Folds coming later in the hour.
Yeah.
We're going to talk to Eilish. Eilish McGarvey, the writer who did the piece in The Nation about Dr. Hager. Dr. Hager, we're going to get into a little more in a little while. Dr. Hager, part of an FDA panel, a respected OBGYN in the Christian community. He might have been the guy that helped sway the vote against over-the-counter sales of
Plan B. Yeah.
Emergency contraceptive. We'll get into that in a second, but let me share my dream with you from last night.
Please,
folks.
Share.
Yes. I'm in Washington at the Capitol building with my dead cat, Butch. Butch lights a cigarette and says, Mark Maron, we must save the filibuster. Bill Frist must be stopped. The only good thing ever to come out of Tennessee was Elvis. I say, okay, Butch, all right, what are you going to do about it? Butch says, wait and learn. So we go into the Senate chamber, and all the senators are milling around. Suddenly, guards come in and announce, "Ladies and gentlemen, a plane has violated our airspace. Please evacuate the building." Everyone starts to freak out and pack up their stuff. Butch stubs out her cigarette and says, "And so it begins." Through the crowd, we spot Bill Frist headed toward the exit. Butch turns to me and says, "It's showtime." She walks up to Frist and meows. Butch says, "Hello, Senator Frist. My name is Fluffy." Frist leans down and scratches Butch behind the ears. "Well, hello, Fluffy. What can I do for you?" "I'm a representative from the Conservative Cats for Christ, and I would like to speak to you about making a large financial donation. Can I talk to you outside by the reflecting pool?" Frist says, "Why, sure, kitty cat. Let's go." Just as we reach the exit, Butch pounces on Frist's shoulders and throws a black bag over his head. Frist says, do I have to do this to get the check?" Butch says, "Silent, imbecile. I'm about to filibust your tiny withered testicles." A black van screeched up and the door flew open. It's John McCain, and beside him his hot wife with her icy blue eyes. McCain says, "You need me, Frist. We're going to come to a compromise about this filibuster one way or another. And remember, I'm the only one that can talk to Butch." Butch dug a razor-sharp claw into Frist's neck and said, "Please, John McCain, let me gut him like a hog. I'm begging you." McCain says, "No, Butch, not yet. You see, Bill, it's all up to you." Bill Frist hung his head and said, I'm not going to get a check, am I?" I turned to Butch and I said, "Did you plan this whole airplane thing?" Butch lights a cigarette and says, "Sort of. We paid off two yokels from Smokestown. We told them not to breach the no-fly zone, and then we relied on their natural stupidity." Butch blew out a plume of smoke and said, "That's the one thing you can always count on." I woke up and my bed was filled with a Cessna Skyhawk SP. Butch is starting to sound like Peter Lorre.
Yeah, really.
All right. I can work on that. Well, you know what time it is now, Riley? Time for Mark Riley's Dog of the Week.
Yes, sirree, Bob, as my dad used to say. Did we have some dogs to choose from this week?
Mm-hmm.
There's Dr. David Hager, who we're going to be talking about in depth very, very shortly. And how about the Utah teacher who let his class watch the dissection of a live dog? Do we live in a civilized society or what? There are more, but this week's canine champ is a reefer-dealing ex-hippie who's become one of the nation's more obnoxious right-wing zealots. Neil Horsley hates gays, wants to use nuclear weapons to promote Southern secession, and is at the forefront of the wacko wing of the anti-choice movement. But that's just his latest incarnation. Back in the day, the abortion-hating Horsley begged his girlfriend to get an abortion, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center. He also did time in federal prison for dealing hash oil. He admits he sold tons of marijuana as well. But that was then, this is now. He thrust himself into the forefront of the anti-choice movement by, among other things, tacitly encouraging the murder of abortion providers. Yet who is Neil Horsley? Maybe his recent appearance on the Alan Combs radio show holds the answer. He refused to deny allegations that he engaged in gay sex and acts of bestiality.
What?
That's right, Marin.
Wow.
Bestiality. Alan Combs asked, quote, "You had sex with animals?" Horsley answered, "Absolutely." As a quote here, "Absolutely. I was a fool. When you grow up on a farm in Georgia, your first girlfriend is a mule." Say what? Here's some more wisdom from Neil Horsley.
"You experiment with anything that moves when you're growing up sexually. If it's warm and if it's damp and it vibrates, you might, in fact, have sex with it."
We could go on, but you kind of get the idea. Hypocrisy isn't a word many of these religious zealots have in their vocabulary. It works for us here at Morning Sedition, however, especially when it comes to the idiot known as Neil Horsley. Nice work, creep. You're the dog of the week. So he dated all of them, huh?
I guess so. There's an orgy sound for that guy.
Yeah, really?
I probably got him all worked up if he was wishing. Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah. Party.
Oh, yeah, boy. Oh, yeah, baby.
Yeah.
Hey, so let's talk about Dr. Hager.
Oh,
let's
yeah.
talk about Dr. W. David Hager, who I remember when this guy started to sort of come around. He was, appointed to the Advisory Committee for Reproductive Health, Reproductive Health Drugs and the Food and Drug Administration. That's the FDA, as many of you know. He was a Bush favorite. He's a friend of Dobson's. He's an OBGYN who's a religious fanatic. Mm-hmm. He speaks out, obviously, against abortion. I assume, I'm going to speculate here, that he's a theocrat of some sort. He has written many books about women's health matters, you know, some of them religiously oriented, stressing the woman's body, and as Jesus cared for women. We're going to get into more titles that he wrote. Well, now his wife of 32 years, I believe, his ex-wife now, has blatantly and very succinctly accused him of anally raping her while they were married for years. And paying her for sex because that he gave her no choice because he kept such a tight grip on the money that eventually, you know, he made a prostitute out of her. She got sick later in life with narcolepsy, and he would then, you know, take advantage of her when she would pass out. This guy is a real creep. He's a real sort of poster child for religious hypocrisy. You know, he's a poster child for, you know, certainly just, well, marital rape. That's disgusting stuff.
Well, look, I mean, the guy could theoretically get locked up because under the definition, under Kentucky law, what he did would have been considered rape if his ex-wife's allegations have validity. But, you know, Mark, the amazing thing that this guy did while he was on this advisory panel to the Food and Drug Administration, you know, this advisory panel voted 23-4 in favor of approving a bid to sell this Plan B emergency contraceptive without a prescription.
So they were in favor of it, majority in favor of selling Plan B over the counter.
Overwhelming majority.
Okay.
Yet when this clown got finished, the FDA, in May of 2004, rejected the advice of its advisory panel, something it very, very rarely does, and especially when the vote is so lopsided. And Hager has taken credit for killing the plan to the plan for Plan B.
Well, exactly. So he did some backroom negotiating. He reached out to religious conservatives, and he was able to muster up enough momentum because he probably frightened these conservatives in terms of their constituents, and was able to, you know, mobilize a movement to get this thing taken out of the hands of people who need it. This is one of those day after pills, I believe, Plan B.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a day after pill. I think you can use it up to 72 hours after unprotected sex. And, you know, the amazing thing is this is the second time in 50 years, in a half century, that the FDA has ignored the advice of this advisory panel.
So this guy is obviously a theocrat, obviously a fanatic Christian, obviously somebody who, you know, doesn't really care about women because his wife, and I believe her, has accused him of anally raping her for years. And I tried to call him, you know, because I like to do that. I know a lot of people say, God, I gave up phone calls when I was 13, crank calls. You know, and you know, I understand that, but you remember why you did them when you were 13? Let me remind you, because they're fun. All right, we're going to have that call when we come back. 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Charles Barkley. When I want to get caught up on the world events and I can't get in touch with Shaq, MJ, Larry, or Manute Bol, I turn to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Y'all ready for this?
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Here on America Radio's Morning Sedition.
I used to love the fat guys.
For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we already talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes.
What is that?
What is that? I'm sorry, did I fluster you? Huh? Did I fluster you, Kayla?
Free gum? Free gum?
All right, anyway.
I love Jerry Springer like he was my father.
I will not fear my meat.
That guy.
You must have quite a package.
All right.
Okay. All right. We get it. You have more of me than I have of you. I understand.
I used to love the fat guys.
All right, here's our cliff notes for today. Yeah, but that out of context, right? In context, it follows up that, you know, when I was gay, that was, isn't that what it was, Chris? I'm sorry?
What's that?
I'm sorry. You weren't listening? Anyways.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, buddy.
So, are we doing this bit or what?
Oh,
wow. Wow.
All right, here's the quick note. You must have quite a package.
Yes,
I know. Yes, and we know exactly what I was talking about there. Bush appointed FDA's Advisory Committee for Reproductive Health Drugs forcibly sodomized his wife for years. Dr. Hager, in the opening of one of his many books, says, "It wasn't until I began to see how Jesus treated women that I understood how I, as a doctor, should treat them." Apparently, these more lurid parables can be found in Paul's letters to Astrogladians. Hager wears a wristband that reads WWJB, which stands for Who Would Jesus Bang? Anything? Nice. Sexual predator. Sexual predator. Fundamentalist hypocrite. Controlling pedagogue. Why isn't this man president? All right, good. Voinovich slams Bolton, but okay, passing him to Senate vote. While he agreed to let the vote pass to the Senate, he called Bolton arrogant and bullying. Bolton, who was waiting for Voinovich in the hallway, thanked him and gave his lunch money back. Okay. U.S. scientists create first self-replicating robots. Scientists at Cornell have created small robots that can build copies of themselves. And just as with humans, as soon as a robot is confronted with an exact copy of itself, it wants to have sex with it. Those are some of your morning today. Clip notes for today. What's the matter, Chris? Did I catch you off guard, man? I'm sorry.
No, buddy. No, good stuff.
Come on, man. Come on. Well, yeah, it was from yesterday. We're just having a good time.
No, it was very funny. All right.
It was?
Pretty dumb.
All right, so I'm not...
Thank you, Morning Sedition.
Oh, Lord. You got the equalizer over here.
So, dude, so I tried to call this Dr. Hager this morning.
Yeah.
I tried because, you know, I like to do the calls. All right, so let's hear that, Kayla.
Medical Society Exchange.
Yeah, I am looking for Dr. Hager.
Dr. Hager?
Hmm.
I can tell you what time his office opens.
Okay.
Dr. Hager's office opens at 8:30.
This is the answering service for him?
This is the emergency paging service.
Oh, so you wouldn't know anything about Christian anal rape, would you?
I'm sorry?
I would need some questions about how to anally rape somebody in a Christian way.
Oh, Jesus.
Why am I so? Why do I get such a? I didn't even know I was going to say that. We had the number. You know, it's good times because you know that woman was not expecting that this morning, and I was happy because now rehearing it because I hadn't heard it since I did it. There was a sort of like, oh, gee, you know, it wasn't like I completely freaked her out, but certainly
close enough.
Certainly, the you know, coffee chat was a little uplifted that there was a different conversation going on over the donuts after that. So as I said, you know, Dr. W. David Hager's papers and books on religion and women's sexuality were very popular in conservative circles, and I have a list of them. See, he wrote Stress in the Woman's Body, and then, of course, the follow-up, How Much Stress Can You Put on a Woman's Body, was equally as popular. Others included As Jesus Cared for Women, Restoring Women Then and Now, and then there was a second volume, As Jesus Cared for Women, Less Sermon, More Mount. Here are some others that Dr. Hager wrote. Christ died for our sins, even the one I'm in the middle of right now. Episiotomy reconstruction, tightening the bond between man and wife. How about this one? This is a book that came out a couple of years ago. For Christ's sake, stop clinching and maybe you'll enjoy it more. God told me to tell you to roll over. This was sort of a comic book. Had this one had pictures. Because, you know, he wants to reach out. You want Plan B? I'll give you Plan B. That was after the vote against the Plan B. Here's another book. Are you sure? I could swear I've seen babies come out of that one too. What is there?
You're going to hell, man.
Again?
Yes. This is the third time this week.
Oh, here's the last book. Over the Counter and In the Behind. A Look at RU486 and What I Like to Do More Than Anything.
Oh, God.
Reaching new levels here on Morning Sedition. I'm sure that'll make people excited. Now, I'm going to say this right. Ailish McCarvey broke the story.
Yes.
On Dr. Hager by interviewing his ex-wife.
Yes.
She's going to be with us in a few minutes. Ben Folds is going to be in the studio with us as well. I'm very excited about that. You know, Ben Folds was, when he was with the Ben Folds Five,
yes,
those first couple albums, very unique songwriter, incredibly charismatic performer. He's one of these guys, he's special. He's a singer-songwriter, but he's got that range and that sort of that following. It's like Elvis Costello. There are these guys that are out in the world that have such a dedicated following, and they deserve it because they're profound talents. We're going to talk to him. I'm looking forward to that. Rumor has it.
Rumor. You're talking about the food or your mom? Which?
You couldn't say two opposite things here. Those are polar opposites. Food and my mom. That's hilarious. See, now my excitement for the food from City Bakery that comes every Friday is going to be slightly diminished because my mom's going to be sitting there.
Right? Why?
You don't understand. My mom,
no.
with the food, all of my life, this was how my mom fed me. She's like, here's some food. It's too bad you can't eat like normal children because you're chubby. All right, or how about this one? Do you really need the cheesecake? I know we're out, and it's dessert time, and it's a fancy restaurant, and they have the best cheesecake in the world, but you don't need it. Well, maybe you should maybe some Melba toast and jelly would be better, something like that.
No fruit for you this morning.
How about some yogurt? Some are you kidding? I am going to eat right in front of my mother. I'm going to eat in front of my mother.
You don't want to miss this, folks. Stay with us. It's Air America Radio.
Medical Society Exchange.
Yeah, I am looking for Dr. Hager.
Dr. Hager?
Hmm.
I can tell you what time his office opens.
Okay.
Dr. Hager's office opens at 8:30.
This is the answering service for him?
This is the emergency paging service.
Oh, so you wouldn't know anything about Christian anal rape, would you?
I'm sorry?
I would need some questions about how to anally rape somebody in a Christian way.
Oh, Jesus.
I don't understand. Is why they hang up on me. 34 past the hour, Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. You're listening to Morning Edition on Air America Radio.
Yes, you are.
Ailish McCarvey is a writing fellow with the American Prospect. Her article in the current issue of The Nation magazine makes some heretofore unknown but explosive charges against Dr. David Hager, the ultra-conservative, uber-conservative religious zealot who inexplicably since... He essentially believes in no reproductive rights at all. He's on the Advisory Committee for Reproductive Health Drugs at the FDA. I'm supposing that that's no longer a position he will hold. Good morning, Ailish McCarvey. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. Well, thanks for being here and joining us in our celebration of the downfall of a religious freak. So David Hager's ex-wife, Linda, these are explosive allegations. She made them to you. You're breaking the story. Why don't you tell us a little bit about them?
Well, essentially, I got to know Linda over the course of this past year, and she alleges that throughout the course of their marriage, David Hager was sexually abusive, but in the last 7 years, the abuse escalated to the point where he would sodomize her without her consent while she was asleep, which under Kentucky law is a felony. It's a first-degree sodomy charge, which is the same as rape. And so that's basically the extent of the allegations. And I don't know if you read this morning, but in the Lexington papers, Hager has said that he doesn't expect to be reappointed to his position after the article broke yesterday.
Well, I certainly don't want to make fun of what his ex-wife went through, and I would like to know, this is she was married to this strange, horrible religious zealot for a lot of years, mm-hmm. and what was the breaking point for her? I mean, when did she finally decide to tell her story? Why did she decide to tell it?
Essentially, they were married for 32 years, like you said, and in the last 7 years is when the abuse became criminal. They divorced in 2002, and if you'll remember when Hager was appointed to the FDA, a lot of people like Jim Dobson and Franklin Graham and Chuck Colson came to his defense and really, talked about how great of a man this guy was. And he was speaking at their alma mater, Asbury College in Kentucky, a small little town in Kentucky, this past October, 2004. She was in the audience to see their middle son give a vocal performance, and Hager was the featured speaker that morning, and he takes to the pulpit, and he talks about a lot of things, about how he's a man of valor and all of these wonderful things he's done at the FDA and stuff, but also that he was talking about their divorce and saying that really the only reason they divorced was that he hadn't spent enough time on his marriage and things, and she was just livid. I mean, he had really gone public with a perception of their divorce that was absolutely inaccurate, and I think the timing was right. I approached her. She didn't approach me. And it took a long time for her to get comfortable speaking with me. She's still a political conservative. She's definitely a Christian believer, but the truth matters to her, and I think she was adamant about getting it out.
Ailish McGarvey, some of the things that she alleged would be crimes under Kentucky law. Does she want to see him locked up?
I don't think so. I think, you know, a number of people have asked me that. Linda, when they divorced, she did not bring these allegations into the divorce proceedings. That would have been an entirely separate criminal trial. She would have had to have gotten, you know, after an episode like this, she would have had to have gotten a rape kit at a local hospital, for instance. And when your husband's a big-time physician in town, you don't exactly just want to show up at the emergency room alleging rape. But now I don't think so. I think she's really concerned about kind of now going back into her life and continuing on. I just think she wanted the truth to get out there.
So why isn't the mainstream press calling this rape?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Why isn't the mainstream papers calling this rape?
I'm not quite sure. I mean, I've been slightly disappointed with the lack of pickup on the sexual abuse angle at all. I mean, there's been a lot of attention paid to the fact that Hager authored a secret memo that has essentially, that probably really changed the course of the FDA's ruling on Plan B going over the counter, the emergency contraception. I'm kind of still waiting to see what the mainstream press eventually does with this. I think there's a lot of wariness about the idea of marital rape. You know, if a stranger rapes you, that's a legitimate news story. But somehow, even though it's against the law and it's a felony, rape by a spouse is a gray area for many people.
So how do you think this is going to play out in the political arena, and how far will the ripples sort of go?
Well, late yesterday afternoon, we saw Hillary Clinton and Patty Murray, who have held up Lester Crawford's nomination to the chair of the FDA. They issued a statement saying that they want a full investigation. They issued it to Mike Leavitt, who's the head of HHS, Health and Human Services, and said, we want a full investigation into this minority report. So that's a good thing. We're going to try to see what that document said and see exactly what Hager's role in this Plan B decision actually was. Also, this morning, the Washington Post is reporting that Lester Crawford's nomination has even sunk even more right now. I mean, it's really stalled up there. He's facing his own personnel problems. And this Plan B decision was the original reason why Crawford's nomination was held up. So as this gets more complicated, it's looking worse and worse for Lester Crawford.
You know, it is getting more and more complicated. And, you know, with the expose that you did, plus with information that we've heard in the past about how there are many people on the religious right who are specifically targeting the FDA, certainly in terms of, people being appointed to different positions within the agency, why do you think the FDA is such a magnet for people from the religious right, if that's an accurate characterization?
I think it's certainly partially accurate. I think that it reflects the real pragmatism on the part of the religious right. You know, it's hard to remember, unless the FDA buffs something huge, like Vioxx, for instance, people aren't really paying attention to the FDA, but it does a lot of important regulatory things. And so when your prime focus is regulating people's sexual morality or sexual lives, particularly women's, the FDA seems like an obvious place to go for that. I mean, you even saw this morning Tom Coburn, who himself is a very conservative, Christian conservative senator, wanting to also block Lester Crawford's nomination to the FDA because Crawford hadn't gone far enough in placing warning labels on condoms. So you see all of this coming from different directions. I think really when you're talking about the regulations of people's private sexual morality, the FDA does come into play, and I think that that's a strategic move on the part of conservatives, Christian conservatives.
My God, like warning labels on condoms, in what sense that, you know, what you're doing is wrong?
No, that they might not work. A lot of bunk science. There's a guy named Joe McElhaney out in Texas who runs an organization called the Medical Institute for Sexual Health. He's a big friend of the Bush family and who's been pushing this bunk science on the ineffectiveness of condoms for a long time now, and it sounds like vis-a-vis Tom Coburn, he's finally getting an audience.
There's a lot of misinformation that goes out in educational packages.
Absolutely.
To kids in terms of, how AIDS is transmitted and all that stuff.
Well, you saw Bill Frist on Meet the Press a few months ago, or one of those Sunday morning shows, unable to talk about, I can't remember who was asking him, but the transcript is hilarious. Somebody kept pushing. Now, Senator Frist, 10 AIDS be spread in sweat and tears, and he's a doctor. He wouldn't even answer the question. You know, he's really
himself.
In the tape.
Ailish McGarvey, how far do you think Dr. Hager is going to go in answering some of the more specific allegations that his wife made, not just in terms of the allegations of crimes, but, I mean, you know, some of the stuff it just makes him sound doggish, quite frankly.
You know, I'm not totally sure. This morning, the Lexington Herald leader had a piece in which he tried to defend himself, but in very vague terms. I don't know that we're going to be hearing much more from David Hager after this. I really can't tell, though. He has surprised me in the past. So we'll just have to watch and find out. I'm really not sure.
So do you have any other of these guys in your journalistic sights?
No, actually, I'm moving to Cambodia in August to write about trade. So
oh, really?
I think I'm done now.
This is it. Now, what do you know about, because I know you were talking about this word getting out and these people stopping reproductive health for a lot of people in education, certainly. Now, the pharmacists are starting to say that they will not give out drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And what is that? What is the status of that? Do you know anything about that? How much of that is happening and whether it's being supported by businesses or anything?
I'm really not totally sure. I think that's happening in isolated instances. They get a lot of attention for doing that. I think actually a more troubling question that really hasn't been broached in relation to this Plan B decision is that according to people inside the FDA, the Plan B decision is on hold, but they're very close to approving something that will look like a split label. So 15 to 18-year-olds will have to have a prescription for the drug, but women above that age can get it over the counter, but it would be like cigarettes, right? So you'd have to show your ID so they know how old you are.
Right.
And that would be effectively a split label for a drug, which is unprecedented in the United States and could really open itself up to lawsuits. You can imagine a big drug chain like a Walgreens or a CVS not wanting to carry something that they could be sued for later on. That's a prescription-only drug that you can give to some people, but you can't give to other people over the counter. I think that's actually been a really people have been underestimating how much of a mess that's going to be for pharmacy chains.
So it looks like a compromise, but it unfolds as a liability.
Absolutely, and it provides a huge barrier for women. I'm from a tiny town in Illinois with 2,000 people, and there's one pharmacy, and it's a guy who used to be an elder in my church. You know,
right.
I don't want to go to that counter and say, "Can I have Plan B?" You should be able to get this like you should get a box of
Right. Come on, Mr. Jones.
Yeah.
You know my family. All right, Ailish, thank you for joining us, and thanks for the work you're doing. It was really a great story.
And good luck in Cambodia.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay, take care. It's 45 past the hour. We'll be back with Rapture Watch and Ben Folds, and I think my mommy's here.
This is Terry Jones from Monty Python, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Morning Sedition. They're not the Messiah. They're very naughty boys on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America. Wake up, sheeple. How's it going? Everything all right? If you're listening in New York, you're listening to 1190 AM. Thank you for listening. Ben Folds, if you recognize that song, is who sang that song that we just heard. He will be on shortly. The Bible's book of Revelation portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah, one of our president's favorite stories. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. Here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with Cardinal Milpington of the recently disgraced Diocese of Denton, Texas. Your Grace.
Come hither, thy flesh-loving idolators. With your yoga sticky pads, fruity-smelling incense, and raw organic unsalted pistachios, ye harbor the tools of Satan. And you're using them to build a bungalow bursting with sin, parrot droppings, and Skittles. Come unto thee, thy besotted hogs of Abimelech, Harmahab, and thou purveyors of rum drinks, miniature plastic umbrellas, and hedonistic hotel pyramids. Filaments.
All right.
I have important end-time news. Using spectral imagery to examine 2,000-year-old biblical fragments, researchers have discovered the sign of the beast is not 666, but 616.
Oh, no.
So you better check your area codes, Michigan. For as I've suspected for years, Kalamazoo is Satan's armpit. And your barbershop quartet's playgrounds for diseased thinking. And hide your shame, Battle Creek, with your cereal factories stoking the fires of unbridled sexing with your delicious toasted flakes of malted cornmeal. And bow your head, Muskegon. You are unmasked. Now the world knows your celery farming heritage center is nothing more than a front for anal sex.
What's going on, man?
You heard it here first, sinners. And by the way, from now on, all my honk if you hate 666 bumper stickers are half off. Gotta make room for the new models. This also goes to that warehouse full of 666 toilet paper I made up. Look, don't blame me for this mix-up. Maybe if certain apostles hadn't sucked so bad at math, they wouldn't have pit the Son of God against the whole Roman army. Well, that's something I got to hack out with my Hebrew accountant. Regardless, the beast is now 616.
Okay.
But make no mistake about this, Mark.
Uh-huh.
666 is still a code for evil.
All right.
As you know, the disciples assign each letter in Revelation its own prophetic number. Using my Windows XP Bible code software, I am now able to recalculate the sum of the letters of every word in the New Testament to find out what demonic manifestation, what horror from Satan's diabolical realm of evil, what bestial thing from Satan's plan the number 666 really stands for. And that thing is the number 616.
That's
yeah, I know. For it was frustratingly prophesied in Revelation X, representing any positive integer, that him who hath understanding count the number 666 from this moment on as representing the number 616. And when people ask about this, let's just giggle at each other like we're little girls. End quote. Otasa cantita motata. Wow. It's the same thing, Mark. It's almost as if this whole rapture culture is a colossal waste of time and the people devoting their lives to it are all crazy. Like a fox! Michigan, you are hereby served notice. I will never listen to another Motown record. They all sound alike anyway.
Ooh.
Wait a... Hey, I don't need any comments from the peanut gallery, all right? Until next time, idolaters, keep on idolaterizing. And we'll keep the line in for you. In Motown.
Oh,
wait a minute. I gotta be what, again?
You've gone too far, Bishop.
Cardinal, let me ask you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Cardinal, yeah. Let me ask you a question. I had somebody come up to me in Ohio when I was there at...
Well, you get around.
Yeah, all right.
Is that one of your tours?
Yeah, I was in Ohio.
You were at Stickies in Ohio?
It's not Stickies.
It must have been a great tour.
Go Bananas.
Go Bananas?
Yeah, it wasn't Stickies.
People go nuts while they were at Go Bananas?
We're at Stickies.
Yeah. Teaneck, New Jersey. Is this? Yeah.
All right. So what I was going to ask you is, a woman comes up to me and says, why is Cardinal Milfington really from Denton, Texas? She's from Denton, Texas. Yeah. And she's like, why is he saying Denton, Texas? I said, well, there's no accounting for what Cardinal Milfington is doing or where he gets this stuff, but do you have any connection to Denton, Texas, for our fan in Michigan? Where was I?
Yes.
Ohio.
Yes. I'm currently living in sin with a woman who was from Denton, Texas.
Ah, see.
Oh,
there
is
you
that
go.
What it is?
Well, you are living with a woman from Denton, Texas?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what do you got going this weekend, Cardinal? Anything?
Well, I'm probably going to be writing some more jokes you're not going to ever do on your damn show.
Oh.
You didn't do any of my jokes this morning. I had a great Hager joke.
Hey, dude, we were trying to hold up the character thing. Now we're the fourth wall's gone. You're not a cardinal. I was about to do the hat and the cape thing, but now...
What am I doing?
Yes.
He's just trying to roll back now.
God, this is wonderful.
Well, a damn batsman here is 55,000
AutoZone. Let's have an AutoZone. You got anything?
AutoZone? Well, I had some a Hager thing going with the AutoZone.
Well, dude, you want to... Which
go ahead. You obviously want to do the Hager thing.
What's the Hager joke?
I can't do it now. See, you set it up wrong, and it's not going to go well.
You want to open for me at Stickies?
Sure,
in a couple weeks.
Do I get a hotel room?
No, you get a hotel room, and only if you do the Milfing
character. I want to stay in the comedy condo. I hate the comedy condo.
Yeah, well, it's weird because you were part of a comedy team, and when you got to share a bed because you're not the headliner,
yeah.
So that was awkward.
Well, every time we had to follow you in the comedy condo, you know, you used to drain your...
No, I did not.
Yes, you did.
That wasn't me. That was another guy. That was, I heard those stories about the comedy condo, about John Fox, and about the mayonnaise jars and this and that. But let me ask you a question, Cardinal.
And you draining your bacon on the streets.
That was not me.
That was you, man.
It wasn't me.
Man's mom's here.
All right, the other day, draining bacon, that could be slang for something, but it's an honest... Let me ask you a question. Who the hell eats what's left in the comedy condo refrigerator? Who does that?
Not me.
All right, I'm just curious what the hell you were getting at. You know what I mean? Cardinal? Jim? Whatever you want? What, come on, give me an Amalgamated Bank, anything? Dance like a monkey.
Come on.
AutoZone, Amalgamated Bank. One Amalgamated Bank.
Come on.
And then we'll discuss the Hager joke afterwards. There's still time for that.
Yes.
Amalgamated Zone. Oh, boy. Wow. This has gone nowhere. It's Friday, isn't it?
Such a letdown. I'm a letdown?
What do you mean I'm a letdown?
Plus, your parents are here, and there's a lot of pressure on me to look good.
You want to wrap this up? Can we wrap it up?
Or sure.
Do you want to do a little whatever thing? Like,
whatever.
All right, good. We'll be back with Ben Folds, my mom, and Jim. All right.
Oh, my God.
Bye.
Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour. It's Morning's Edition here on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Good morning, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, geniuses, progressive utopians, working conservatives. Good morning to all of you. Wake up, sheeple. It's Friday. I hope it's okay. It's a beautiful day here in New York City if you're listening to 1190 WLIB. It's been a very exciting show, and it's going to get more exciting. We are pleased to bring on the man behind Ben Folds 5, obviously, and he's also the producer of William Shatner's latest CD. His new solo album, Songs for Silverman, was just released. He'll be playing in Philadelphia tonight, Boston tomorrow night, after which he heads off to Europe. Ben Folds is here. All right, Ben, so I want to start with something that jumped right out at me right away. All right, you grew up in the South, and now you're living in Australia. I mean, did the last 4 years really freak you out? Did you just have to, like, jump ship?
I'm really far south now. I live really? Gone as far south as you can go. I'm in Nashville some of the year.
Okay.
And the other part of the year, I'm in Australia. And I guess it could be said that all the people that threatened to leave the country, I may be the only person I can name that actually did it. But I didn't really, because I still live in Nashville.
Do you like Nashville because of the songwriting scene or because of the musicians' community or the recording equipment? Why Nashville?
It's the recording equipment, first of all. I mean, for me, it's like really central, and I can get to New York quickly and get out to the West Coast. It's good.
Now, Adelaide is a little off the beaten path, even by Australian standards. What made you pick Adelaide?
It's remote, and I live in a remote part of Adelaide, too.
Oh, wow.
So it's like I live like a remote from the remote from the remote.
Would it be the south of Adelaide?
Actually, yes. I do live south of Adelaide. I live down the south beach. Adelaide, this is where my wife's from Adelaide, and so that's where we end up.
That'll do it. Love will move you every time.
Yeah, move me all the way there. It's like, she is from almost exactly the opposite coordinates on the globe from me. If you drew a straight line through from North Carolina, where I'm from, down, it would just about make to Adelaide.
Wow. So this
11,000 or 22,000, I can't remember how many miles.
You guys had your charts done?
Yeah.
Mine
doesn't look too good, though.
No.
Because I'm like that asshole sign to begin with. Virgo.
Hey, wait a minute. That's my sign.
We're the asshole sign. Have you ever noticed there's like nobody we get along with? If you read the charts, it's like you kind of find some comfort in Capricorn.
And sort of.
And that's about it. But everyone else is like, you get along well when they give you like 8 or 9 different
signs. I was almost a Virgo. I'm a Libra.
You're only 3 days off of Virgo.
Yeah, I'm a Libra. I'm half
You're late.
Yeah. I go back and forth. I try to balance my with the
you were on the cusp of the anus.
Cusp of the anus? Can you make that a song, please? I'll write it down for you.
That's going to be
Benfold's song title, Cusp of the Anus.
Sounds like a good album title.
Could be one of your songs, couldn't it?
It could be. I had a couple of good ones last night I won't go into. We were sitting on the bus just going right to that place you go to on tour.
Sure, and?
Not
enough. Oh, come on. Did you want to ask about William Shatner?
Yeah, I mean, because I've always found Shatner to be a fascinating character.
Mm.
And, you know, when he first started doing music, I was just, it like totally freaked me out.
And he played on his record. Is that the deal?
I wrote and produced this record, basically. And, I mean, he wrote a lot of stories and lyrics and things, and then I set that to music, and I would bring in, like, Amy Mann to do a song with him, or Henry Rollins, Joe Jackson.
Those are pop heavies.
Yeah, I wrote a song with Nick Hornby, the guy that wrote High Fidelity and Bad Boy and all those things, and he just kind of cooked up out of his head this really cool story that happens to be really pretty close to Shatner's life without even knowing it. So it was, yeah, things came together in a really cool way. It was really, really neat.
Somehow you just cooked up a story about a Jewish guy from Canada who became a Starfleet commander?
Yeah, it's just like he had no idea. Because he's like the Nostradamus.
I guess so. Well, what was it about Shatner? Was this done with a campy sensibility or some sort of honest respect for his musical talents? Or is there a difference for you?
I think it was honest respect for his life experience and his acting.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really talented cat.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, I think you can take that for granted with someone, who's, you know, kind of been a thing in the business for that long, you know, and he's amazing. And it's a good record, but it's got some funny stuff. I mean, he's funny, like, and he can't help that. So that's in it, but it's also serious as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, in this last record, for Songs for Silverman, you played with a band that you brought together, mm-hmm. and you recorded in Nashville at the RCA, the same RCA studios that Johnny Cash, Elvis Presley, and other dignitaries of early rock and roll once performed in. I guess I have two questions. Do you believe that there are ghosts in the studio? Do you believe that studios have a certain tone and sound and feel because of what went on there before?
Could be. I mean, there's something, at least, to if something lasts that long, there's something to it, I think.
Do you think that going in?
Part. It feels pretty cool in there. It really does. It's got a great feeling to it. I think the yoga people call it akashic energy, right?
Where
it's like the stuff's in the walls. I don't know. It really does feel great in there. I like old things. So.
Was there old equipment as well? Were you able to use some microphones that were different?
I use old mics. It's all my equipment in there. I've set up camp in there for the last 4 years.
Oh, okay.
So it's been my place. That's where I recorded Shatner's record.
Now, Nashville, at least for me, has always evoked that whole country music thing. Is the music scene there as segregated as country music might suggest?
Well, it kind of is. It used to be, I think there was a really awkward growth period in Nashville where the country music business decided to be a little more open-minded and try to sign some pop acts. It was really probably not good for the pop acts because they were all trying to do things really in a way they didn't understand, and it probably killed a few acts that I can actually name. But now there's East Nashville over the river, and that's where all of the original pop goes on, and they stay in their own zone, and it's really good stuff. There's some good bands. I mean, I don't keep up with a lot of music personally, but I hear a lot of tapes, you know, from my friends, and I say, this is so and so. I go, wow, that's really good. So there's some good stuff coming out of there pretty soon.
So the spectrum is basically you have country, you have modern country, and then, you know, over on the left bank of Nashville, you get pop.
Yeah.
Which is not, so what's really missing there in the gap is just, you know, standard rock, I guess. Because you would differentiate between, you know, what has come to be known as modern pop and just rock and roll, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. I guess rock and roll is kind of like, I mean, it's like ding, 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 ding.
Exactly.
But I don't really think about that too much anymore. I think that basically it's just people do things one way on the one bank, like you say, and the ones that there's the Judaist people's front, and then there's the people's front of Judea. On the
yeah, I get it.
And they throw spears across the banks. And
so you have a new song on your new record, Songs for Silverman, called Jesus Land. Was this inspired by Nashville?
Not Nashville as much. I live in a rather blue neighborhood, and I just stay there and I walk. I don't really drive a car very much at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really see the ding 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 ding
yeah,
outside.
Yeah.
You know? But
that's not rock there. That was the Dixieland kind of.
Yeah, that was the Appalachian.
That was a toothless.
That was the toothless thing. I don't go out the toothless area of town too much.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, it's like, I mean, Jesusland was probably inspired more by touring than anything, and I just wanted it to be really more about a feeling as you walk through an inner city out to the outskirts, and just the quality of what you see. And I just think if I write a song, you know, you see the title's Jesusland, and one would assume it's going to be a preachy song, but I feel that as a musician, I should stay away from that, because everyone knows what my point of view is likely to be, because most musicians are, you know, on the proper side of things, and that's
at least if you're on the left bank of Nashville.
That's right. I would reside on the left bank, and everyone knows that, so it's just predictable for me to, like, you know, take a swing, but Jesusland is just like, you know, it's all that stuff out there that you see in America.
Well, let's hear some of that song then. This is Jesusland from Ben Folds' new album, Songs for Silverman.
Down the tracks, beautiful McMansions on a hill that overlooks the highway. Riverboat casinos and you still forget to see the soul. Jesus Christ.
We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with more Ben Folds. We'll hear some more from Songs for Silverman, and we'll find out how political Ben's fan base really is. It's 16 past the hour. This is Air America Radio.
No one knows your fame. Billboards quoting things you never say. You hang your head and pray.
Morning Tradition on the air. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
The hour, Mark Barron, that's Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. We're talking to Ben Folds. That, of course, is Underground by Ben Folds 5. It was a song that first put Ben Folds on the map. All right, I got to ask you, what is your perfect song? I mean, not a song you've written, but a song you listen to.
I think I can think of a couple. Marie by Randy Newman, I think, is a damn near perfect song. You know, Wichita Lyman is a great song.
Yeah.
The Glenn Campbell sing.
What about politics? It seems like you're not afraid to have a song like Jesusland on the first,
yeah.
on this album, on Songs for Silverman. You've dealt with abortion in a sort of muted way in another song. And what do you feel about your audiences? You find your audiences are politically motivated in any way, or?
No, I don't think they are, and I try to keep my political views to the emotional level,
yeah.
Because I think that's my job as a songwriter, and not to make speeches, kind of like what I was saying earlier. I mean my job on Brick was just to draw a portrait of what it feels like to be a teenager and be going through an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that could be construed as either side,
sure,
of the fence, and it shouldn't be a political statement. It should just be a human statement. And then the same thing with Jesus Land, or there's a song on an EP I've got called All You Can Eat, and it's it's a pretty sarcastic song, but it never really it just to me it's just about now the audience I think, you know, because Mylanus is really young, and the only thing, the only complaint I have is I feel like people at 18, 25 years old ought to be a little more idealistic, and I feel like we're getting a little jaded. Like the kids are can say, like, I'll get picked up from the airport, say, you know, by a college kid to go play a university show, and I'll say, you know, talk about what's going on or something, they're likely to go, don't you know all politicians are corrupt? So that's just the way it is.
Sure.
You know, like, grow up. And I think, well, you're 18 years old. How do you know that, first of all? And don't you think you should try to do something about it, second of all?
Yeah, that's better than them saying, George W. Bush is a genius and we think he's God.
It's not better. It's more dangerous, I think, because if you just go, okay, well, we know what he is. And that's okay with us because that's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's worse.
You think that's worse?
I do think it's more dangerous because it's like it's just a total write off. You're giving someone a blank check.
Oh, so they're dismissing politics altogether.
They're dismissing it because they feel like they feel that it's out of their control, and they think that somehow he is looking after them. And he's being crooked on their behalf.
I get you.
And you want to say he's screwing you. He's not being.
Right.
He's not, this is not on your behalf. This
right.
is on his behalf, and that's what the problem is.
Real quickly, you mentioned earlier a bit about Nashville and the scene there. What do you listen to when you're in Australia? Are there groups there that maybe we don't hear in the States that are... yeah, that, what is
right.
that a didgeridoo?
That looked like the bong, actually. You play the bong.
That's better.
Yeah, well, Australia has this really amazing... national radio station, public-funded national radio station that's run by kids, and they'll play anything they want. And in fact, one of the amazing things about that network is that they really get into politics in a really they don't restrain anything, and it's really interesting. I learn a lot by being over there and listening to what. You know, teenagers are listening to in Australia and their view of what goes on over here. And they do that once on the hour. And they'll give you, they're both sides to it. And it's really, I mean, the music is like all over the road. They really don't have a chart to speak of on this station, which is awesome. They just play whatever. And as a result, and like, my records get played a lot, even like the internet ones that aren't even available in the stores, just because someone will request it and they'll play it one time. And I'd rather get played one time among some other stuff than have it be like this big race, you know.
Right on. The album is, the CD, I still say album, because I was, you know, brought up back then.
An album.
That's a record.
The record, yeah. Songs for Silverman, is going to be out on, it's been out since April 26th, I guess, so it's out now, you can get it. Okay. Thanks for joining us, Ben Folds. It was great talking to you.
Good to talk to you, Tim.
Great. And before we go to break, let's hear a little bit more of the first single off Songs for Silverman. This is Landed by Ben Folds.
To the West Coast, away from everyone.
I got the iNews coming up. I got my mommy's here. We'll talk to her. We got more show. What a great song this is, huh, Riley?
It is.
Air America Radio.
She like to push me and talk me back down till I believe I was a crazy one minute away.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
We'll be right back.
the county.
There you go. That's Wichita Lineman by Glenn Campbell. Ben Folds was just in here telling us how it was a perfect song.
Yeah.
One of his perfect songs. It's 34 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm going to be at Gotham Comedy Club tonight and tomorrow. Two shows tonight, two shows tomorrow. You know, of course, Riley, sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. Thank God we got the machine.
Yeah.
The iNews 5000. Here we go. All right. Here we go. Let's feed it some headlines. From the New York Times, Republican moderates in Senate sense intensifying pressures. Republican moderates in Senate sense intensifying pressures. Translation, neocons force moderates to attend Kool-Aid chugging party.
No, that wasn't a good enough one. Here we go. Let's feed it again.
Republican moderates in Senate sense intensifying pressures. Moderates say jackboots tight, uncomfortable. How's that? Better? Nothing?
Better.
What? Get, all right, here we go. From Fox News. From Fox News.
Free golf.
Judge ends Nebraska's gay marriage ban. Judge ends Nebraska's gay marriage ban. Translation. Court says go Cornhuskers.
Listen to the Jew go on.
Oh! All right. From the Associated Press, diehard fans pay $500 to see Star Wars. Diehard fans pay $500 to see Star Wars. Translation, money saved living with mom put to good use. How's that? How's that, all right?
I used to love the fat guys.
Anyways, here we go. Moving on. As we talked about earlier, is there a problem?
Oh, my goodness.
Look, Dr. W. David Hager, a prominent obstetrician gynecologist, was an appointee to a committee on the for reproductive health drugs in the Food and Drug Administration. Has been accused publicly by his wife of anally raping her during their marriage for years. This was a big guy. Certainly not going to be reappointed to the FDA. Don't know how his practice is going to be. He is a writer of books, a respected hypocrite in the religious right community. I tried to call to talk to him. Can we hear that, Kayla?
Medical Society Exchange.
Yeah, I am looking for Dr. Hager.
Dr. Hager?
Hmm.
I can tell you what time his office opens.
Okay.
Dr. Hager's office opens at 8:30.
This is the answering service for him?
This is the emergency paging service.
Oh, so you wouldn't know anything about Christian anal rape, would you?
I'm sorry?
I would need some questions about how to anally rape somebody in a Christian way.
Oh, Jesus.
I don't understand why she hang up on me. And why, you know, I must have made her morning on some level. You know.
Well, you'd see her say, "Oh, geez."
But yeah, can we say it was an "Oh, Jesus"? Can we say it was?
Yeah,
an
we can say it was an "Oh, Jesus."
Well, what a lot of people might not realize, and some people realize, is that Dr. W. David Hager was a very popular author in terms of dealing with women's issues.
Yes.
On a Christian level. He's written books. He wrote "Stress in the Woman's Body," and of course, the follow-up book, "How Much Stress Can You Put on a Woman's Body?" Other books, As Jesus Cared for Women, Restoring Women Then and Now, and the second volume, As Jesus Cared for Women, Less Sermon, More Mount. Is there an issue here? Some of the other books he wrote, Christ Died for Our Sins, even the one I'm in the middle of right now. There is Episiotomy Reconstruction, Tightening the Bond Between Man and Wife. Riley, I think Riley's more embarrassed than my mother's hearing me do this.
Yes, I am.
This was a hugely popular book in certain areas. For Christ's sake, stop clenching and maybe you'll enjoy it more. It's very popular.
I just want to tell you that you're getting a little funnier.
Okay, good. Thanks for putting that in there.
Free gum?
Here's the other one. How about this one? You want Plan B? I'll give you Plan B. Anything? All right. Okay. All right. This is my favorite book, and I don't know how well these books are going to sell. This one by Dr. W. David Hager. Are you sure? I could swear I've seen babies come out of that one, too.
Oh.
Yay!
Yeah, nice work, Maren.
Look how proud my mom is.
Yeah, I'm sure. You're going to be in the next Snoop Dogg video, Girls Gone Wild, Albuquerque?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Is it all going down the toilets? Here we go. wait, there's one more book. I'm sorry.
Uh-oh.
I'm sorry, there's one more book, all right?
I used to love the fat guys.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to bring that up again.
Jews.
Oh.
Jews. Jews.
All right, here we go. Here we go. This is the final book by W. David Hager. Over the counter and in the behind. I look at RU486 and what I like to do more than anything. Okay, all right. Well, I think we've officially crossed the line here.
Yes.
Riley, what are you, you looking forward to meeting my mom in a second?
Absolutely.
Are you? What do you got going this weekend? Anything important? Anything good?
No, you know, I'm going through a whole, mortgage house thing.
So you decide to go ahead and sell it. That's it. You're selling it. It's on the market. This is the time. What kind of advice have you been getting? Because, I got that house sitting out there in L.A.
In L.A., yeah.
And there's a friend of my wife's is in there now with my cats just hanging out.
Uh-oh.
And I don't know what we're going to do with it. I guess we're going to have to make plans. Either I'm going to keep it or I'm not going to keep it. But what were you told? You said, did someone say, get out now, sell it now?
Well, I mean, everyone's saying that it's been a hot real estate market for some time, although we heard a rumor the other day that there's going to be some articles coming out next week that say at least the market here in the New York area is going to tank soon. So I don't know. Maybe I should get out now. I don't know.
But don't they say this constantly? We can ask my mother.
Yeah,
my
they do.
They do say
constantly that. But they're not making any more land, Mark.
That's what people keep saying. It's like, there's only a certain amount of room.
Yeah.
And I don't think, from what I understand, Southern California, always a place to live. And with show business, you always got people coming in. They're making a fortune overnight for no reason, saying they need a house.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we'll rent it, but then I got to be a landlord. You don't want to be a landlord.
You want somebody calling you up all the time. Oh, man, the water's too cold. You don't want to go through that.
Would I have to be that guy?
Well, you can hire somebody and pay them money to manage it for you.
Would I have to be the guy with the wrench that comes in? What's the problem?
No, you don't have to do the wrench thing, but you do have to have somebody that does the wrench.
I'll tell you, I did that once before I came out here.
Yeah.
I actually fixed the pipe under the sink, and I wasn't doing much before I got this job, but sitting around thinking about things. So I went and took it upon myself. I think I told you the story before. By the time I finally got it right, I had built a pretty dysfunctional relationship with the guy at the hardware store who, by the fourth time I came in that day, he was going, "What? How difficult is it? It's a wrench."
Got tired of taking your money?
He was yelling at me.
Oh, wow.
I'll tell you, once I fixed it successfully, if there was any moment during my day where I was just sitting there going, "God, my life sucks. I have not done anything in this life to achieve." Wait, I'm going to go look under the sink.
Yeah,
and
I'd just
look under the sink and I'd be like, "Oh, look what I did. I fixed the pipe myself.
Hey,
I'm a man. And I'm
calling somebody. I have a problem, I call somebody. I can't fix nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing whatsoever.
This is a thing you do it yourself in your head. You can fix whatever you want to. If you applied yourself, you just don't feel it.
No, my wife is bitter at that.
That's the other thing I was telling you, is that we get into these situations where if someone's there to do it for us, why should we bother?
Hey, I wash her clothes. Well, she doesn't complain.
Oh, now this is a new interesting part of Riley that I never knew about.
I do the family laundry. She does the family plumbing.
How do you like that, Kayla?
Yeah.
Riley does the wash. Who would have known?
Hey,
you can handle that?
I can handle it.
Okay, whites go in now.
Yeah.
What?
No, I was going to say, do you separate the whites from the colors?
What do you think of this? South Africa? What are you talking about?
You socks.
Yeah, of course I separate them.
Nice. Now, do you use some bleach?
No, I don't use, color fast bleach.
Wow. Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't use, like, the hard chloride.
How are you with flower arrangements?
Not so good.
All right. So why don't we
how'd you celebrate Mother's Day there, Riley?
Huh?
Well, they made him breakfast.
Yeah, they made me breakfast. Took me out to brunch. It was wonderful.
Right.
But the key to good washing is soaking, folks. Soak them bad boys.
Oh, yeah? Is that true?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, see, I don't, I have to, I've been taking my laundry in. Maybe I'll come over, we'll have a laundry party. That'd be nice.
That'd be wonderful.
Well, can we wear aprons? Maybe I'll cook and you can do the wash. We'll watch your wife fix the sink or something.
And we'll watch Oprah.
Work on the car. All right, so we'll come back. My mom's going to come in, maybe give us some real estate advice. Or how do I look?
Yeah,
all right?
Please, we need some real estate advice.
I gotta go. I've been holding my stomach in for a half hour. All right, it's 43,000 the hour, Air America Radio.
You're a heartless individual.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
8 past the hour. Let's land this thing. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yeah.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I love this song.
Yeah.
This is a great record. There's my mom. That's Toby Maron. How are you, Mom?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Thanks for coming. Did you remember this? You know this album? We used to have this in the car on 8-track when we had the Capri station wagon. You remember that?
Remember.
No idea. She has no idea.
Station wagon.
It was one of the big ones. You remember. And Dad was compulsive with the 8-tracks, and then just one of the many things that defined mother and child reunion. Oh, I see that. Now I get it.
Now
that's
the
right.
Wheels are turning.
Wow, how unclever am I? You have Pashman sets up this mother and child reunion song because we haven't seen you. Happy Mother's Day, by the way, belated. It's nice to see you. I haven't seen you in a while. But we'll talk in a minute. Let me take this call. Hello, Ted from Nebraska. What's going on?
Hello, Mark and Mark. I can't believe the Democrats want to subvert the Constitution with the filibuster like
this.
Oh,
no, it's happening. Oh, no, I hate when help me, Riley. Oh, my God. Oh, no, it's happening. My thoughts are starting to change. I'm becoming him. Oh, no.
Now, Pennsylvania.
From Radio Halliburton, it's Right and Early, the conservative's way to wake up with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good morning, neocons. It's 34 past the hour here on Radio Halliburton, where the truth hurts. The Democrats want to save the filibuster. What's the matter, loser? Nobody listening to you? And now a word from the Democrats. It's not like you liberals have anything to say.
Oh, hi, I'm Barbara Boxer, and I'm an obstructionist. We Democrats have to talk all day just to keep those mean judges off the bench. They won't let me kill babies whenever it's convenient. Boo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
Hey, Barbara, put a shark in it. Whoa, that creeped me out. You got the filibuster? Get ready, liberal scum, for the killibuster. Here we go. Hey, Democrats, Mark the Shark is talking here, and you can't shut me up. Mark the Shark, Mark the Shark, Mark the Shark, talk, 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 talk. I can do this all day. Mark the Shark, talk, liberal bad cheese, Danish latex, handcuffs, ball gag. Look, I'm talking here. I'm talking here. Talk, 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 talk. Your agenda's going down the tubes because I'm talking. Talk, 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 talk. Oh, 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 yes. Here we go. Oh, oh, yeah. Time for a rebuttal. Rebuttal. Get it? Hey, it's 36 past the hour. Let's take a call. You're on the air, caller.
Oh, those damn liberals, feminazis, taxes.
All right, you are, caller. We should shut up those damn liberals. Wait, I've got an idea.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yow! What's with my buttons? That doesn't work. Mark the Shark is always ready to use a nuclear option.
I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
Hey, it's 38 after the hour. Time for the Neocon Business Report. If you've got anything invested in the Democrats, sell! Stick around, neocons. I'll be back with Toby Keith.
Don't touch that dial, Patriot. We'll be back with Right and Early.
Wow. I passed.
You all right, man?
I don't know, man. I passed out, and I thought my mom was here. Oh, my God, she is here. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mark.
So how's the trip up in Florida? Everything okay?
Everything's great.
More importantly, do I look thin? How do I look,
you,
Mom?
You look so great.
Yay.
There you go.
You got taller.
Oh, yay. So. I guess, let's talk about me for a second, because it's one of my favorite topics. Now, was I always as charming and wonderful as I am now? Take your time on that. I don't want you to rush into an answer. I want you to just...
No!
Oh, boy, it's getting honest with you. But from what I recall, Grandma always said that I was just a happy, wonderful kid full of joy and love. What went wrong?
I have no idea.
So
I guess I kept asking.
You're not going to take any responsibility. I understand.
But look at you now.
I know. Thank God. Right?
Yes.
My father was in here a few months back, and he came into the studio and immediately fell asleep. It was very encouraging. it's nice to have so much parental support.
Oh, my God.
So what are we going to do in New York? Do you want to go to the Museum of Modern Art?
Yes.
That's the one thing that you did do well when I was growing up is that you made sure to take me to lots of art museums. and you gave me a good sense. Listen to me, I'm making up for lost time here.
Yeah,
everybody's fun in the world.
You gave me a great open mind. You made me a progressive. I remember you took me to see George McGovern in Old Town in Albuquerque, New Mexico, when he was running for president. What was that,
1972? Sure.
Do you remember doing that?
No, I don't. I'm sure I did. That's something I would do.
You definitely took me to that. And then there was all the times that you left me in the parking lot at Hebrew School because you apparently had other plans. And of course, there was the never-ending Husky section issue. But George McGovern
did. We talk about that. You always talk about the Husky section.
Yes. But that's behind me.
That's
because,
history.
Because
yeah.
Now I'm not
look
fat.
At you now.
Oh, this is great.
You
this
look so terrific.
And funny,
Mark.
Right? How
I
funny am I?
I'm so proud. I'm sitting here just...
Compelling?
Yes.
Compelling, that's what they say.
Compelling.
Yeah. Can we get some real estate tips from your mom?
Sure.
I mean, is the market done or what?
I don't think it is.
Really?
I really don't. From everything I hear in Florida, it's not.
Oh, okay. Because, there's about to be an article coming out next week in some magazine or newspaper here in New York. It says it's almost all over here in New York. But they do that every 6 months, right. I think, just to scare people.
So that means, but what does all over mean? That mean I can get a two-bedroom for $1.7 million as opposed to $2.1
million? That's it. $400,000 savings.
And what happens if you sell your house? Where are you going?
Yeah,
exactly. Under a bridge.
Oh, that's much cheaper.
Yeah.
And they can wash the clothes right in the water
like the Indians did.
Mr. Marin, is it true that... you caught Mark smoking pot once, and what did you do? Did you actually tell him to go upstairs and play guitar?
Well, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it wasn't upstairs.
It was
across the street. I was over at, I don't know if I should mention people's names.
No!
Yeah, so I smoked pot and I came home, and you got that weird look on your face where, you thought you were going to discipline me, and then, you got afraid of that. you're like, Mark... And then there, I knew I was safe. And she goes, "Are you stoned?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And you just like got all flustered. And you said, "Well, then why don't you go play guitar? They say you play better when you're like that."
I said that.
Yeah, you did.
I did.
And in retrospect, did that seem like punishment to you, or
were
you...
No, I wanted to see if it was true.
she was experimenting on you.
And in your recollection, was it true?
I thought you always played guitar well.
Oh, my God. This is a whole different mom. You know what? I now I'm going to have to send you more flowers. Thank you for being here, Mom.
The other ones never came.
So the next ones will be the first
one. Yeah, okay. Well, maybe it's a delivery problem. I'll call. hang out for a minute. Let me do these, Mom. Okay, for those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Bush, appointee to FDA's Advisory Committee for Reproductive Health, drugs, forcibly sodomized his wife for years. The anal sex was just his own form of natural or unnatural birth control, depending on where you stand. Huh? Hager was a big fan of the Left Behind series of books. The Left Behind series. The patients at Hager's obstetrician office complained that he made them get in these stirrups face down, people. Hello, face down. Moving on. Sorry, Mom, I'm embarrassed. Boyanovich slams Bolton, but okays passing him to Senate vote. The Senate will vote along partisan party lines on a man neither side is really happy about, who is probably incompetent, will do untold harm to America's reputation in the world just to claim a hollow political victory. Just as the founding fathers intended. Nothing. Here we go. Same secret Bilderberg meeting of world leaders held in Germany. The conference gets its name from the Bilderberg Hotel in Holland, the site of the first secret meeting in 1954. The Bilderbergs were close to being called the Howard Johnson Schiphol Airport meeting, but it was booked that year. Today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. You know what they really are talking about at the Bilderberg meeting, don't you? Soylent Green! Wake up, sheeple! We're running out of tofu! Those are your morning tradition. Cliff Notes. Mom will go to the museum. Thank you for coming in and saying hello.
Yeah.
Riley, you have a great weekend, will you?
Yeah, you too. And thanks for the real estate tips.
next week,
we got Noah Feldman, who we've had on before. He's going to talk about whether there's a civil war in Iraq. Comedian Greg Proops will be here. And I got to do jury duty. My goodness.
Oh, Tuesday, I'm by myself.
Beware, miscreants. Have a good weekend.
You too, Riley.
Air America Radio.